Blog Talk Radio.
From two beautifully scenic and historic locations, the Hudson Valley, New York, and Willow, Alaska, this is the Side Vibe, brought to you by Dog Works Radio. Your hosts are author, journalist, and photographer, the Five Sides mom, Dorothy Wills Raftery, and Dog Works Radio executive producer, canine behaviorist, trainer, and lead musher of Team Aneke, Robert Forto. The Saib Vibe is all about the magnificent breed of the Siberian Husky. From training to grooming and for those who show and breed, from parenting to playing and rescuing huskies in need, whether mushing over snow-covered trails or lounging on tropical shores, even for Hollywood Sibes on the big silver screen and so very much more. If it's about a Siberian Husky, we'll chat about it here.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and it is Sunday, January 19th, 2014, our first show of the new year here on the Side Vibe, and calling in from New York, Dorothy Wills Raftery. Dorothy, how's it going?
Hi, it's going well, and happy 2014 to you and to everybody. And today it's a special day here at the Five Sides household because it also marks our pupsters, Wolf, Chloe, and Bandit's sixth birthday.
Oh, awesome. Very cool.
Now, Robert, before we get into today's guest, there are a few announcements. I just want to talk about a new book and some huskies that are out there who really could use our help in spreading the word about them.
Okay.
First, I wanted to just say that I'm happy to say that my latest book, Buddy the Christmas Husky, based on a true holiday miracle, it's illustrated by Barbara K. Slocum. We had a holiday release a few days before Christmas, and this story isn't just a Christmas story. It actually is for all seasons, but Buddy the Christmas Husky was an abandoned and abused dog walking the streets of Arkansas who was rescued by a Good Samaritan on Christmas Day in 2011. And through a wonderful network of caring people across the globe and through social media, and Robert, I know you and I always talk about the power of social media, and this is a perfect example of that. But Buddy not only found a loving home states away in Georgia, but he also received lots of donations towards his ongoing medical care, and still they're raising funds for that. Buddy's foster mom, Shari Belairjean, she was a previous guest of ours on the Side Vibe, and listeners can tune into that episode to hear all about Buddy by searching our online catalog at dogworksradio.com and search for the Side Vibe show where all the previous episodes are listed. And Buddy also has his own Facebook page of the same name. He has many fans, and I'm happy to say they are loving the book, which is available through Arctic House Publishing online store, and that's at www.arctichousepublishing.com. And a percentage of proceeds post-production costs will be donated toward Buddy's care. And when his account's paid, monies will go into his Buddy's program at the University of Georgia College of Veterinary Medicine, where he's treated for other dogs in need. Now, as we know, there are many huskies in need out there, but two that I've been closely following, and I've been asked to share information to help span the globe with this, with it, and they actually are from across the globe, too, two very different stories, but I've shared them on my page. There'll be more information there. I am going to be putting up a blog post about both of these cases tomorrow, so if folks want to see the photos, they can certainly go there. These are Husky Celine from Michigan and Chuppa Chups from Saudi Arabia. Celine is an 11-year-old red and white Siberian Husky, and she was lost near Midland, Michigan. Celine has been lost since November 3rd from the parking lot of Valley Plaza Resort, and that's at 5221 Bay City Road in Midland, Michigan. Her family was packing up from a dog show, and Celine was in a crate in the far back of the pickup, so she wasn't even seen by anybody. What they're suspecting is that someone must have crawled into the back of the truck and either opened the crate or possibly abducted her. Her parents never even saw her leave the crate, and they've been searching high and low. There are posters and billboards all over. She has her own Facebook page called Celine the Siberian, and the URL is https://www.facebook.com/bringcelinethesiberianhome. the phone numbers to call for any sightings, and again, I'll have this information over on my blog effective tomorrow, are 484-686-4022 or 610-845-5042. They say call anytime, and, you know, please, if anyone spots her, sees any sightings, please, you know, get in touch with the family who are really worried about her. And then, Robert, we're going to cross the globe over to Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, where Chupa Chups is a husky dog that was surrendered to a foster home by a volunteer that rescued Chupa Chups off the streets of Jeddah. And they said he's now being tried out by a foster family to see whether they adopt him or not, even though what they tell me is that the chances are very low for this adoption. Since the foster home is already full of dog cases, they're not able to foster him for too long, and they're saying Chupa Chups is at risk of euthanization. While they said this decision wasn't easy to make, there are apparently no animal shelters, they said, in Saudi Arabia, so they try to help out those that they can on their own using funding. The vet believes Chupa Chups to be about 3 years old, and he is an intact male. He has good teeth, but they said his one eye is bigger than the other, and it's somewhat inflamed and being treated. Unfortunately, finding homes, they said, for the husky in their area is very difficult, and the foster parent says that Chupa Chups is a very lovely boy who does need training. In general, they said that, you know, keeping dogs as pets in their culture is very foreign, so they really want them to find, you know, a home in a better climate with people who are very familiar with huskies. So they are reaching out to folks here in the United States to see if there's anyone who can help save Chupa Chups. To see photos of them, visit my blog at fivesides.blogspot.com. Tonight to tomorrow, I'll be posting it. If anyone's interested in helping or wanting more information, please contact the person that is behind this operation, and the email is iheartba6areg@gmail.com. And again, I'll have that information up on my blog. It is on my Five Sides Facebook page. So that's the news from around the globe.
There you go.
Today on the Side Vibe, we're very pleased to welcome Kristen and Tiffany Manroth, and they're of the Siberian Husky Lifeline, which is also known as Shell, which was developed by founder Kristen in 2009 after Kristen spent many years devoting all her free time to helping stray dogs in need. She decided to make the organization husky-specific, she says, for the most part, because her male husky, Vinny, isn't fond of other breeds. The Shell Fund is a nonprofit 501c3 tax-exempt organization since October of 2009, and they're set up to fund the rescuing of Siberian huskies from local high-kill pounds and owners who can no longer care for their dog, and as a rescue, they also rehabilitate the new dogs and ultimately find them a forever home. Now, Tiffany, she wears many hats at the rescue, including being the adoption coordinator, social media, and website guru. She started volunteering with the rescue about 2 years ago. At this time, she was an unemployed social worker trying to decide where her life was going to go next. She had her first two huskies at this point, and she said, in all honesty, she thought she knew the breed, but when she started working with Kristen, she found out she knew very little. Tiffany said once she started volunteering her time, she found that she had never been more passionate about anything in her entire life. With this newfound passion, she said she had so much drive to help the rescue grow. And grow it has. Over the last 2 years, Kristen and Tiffany have rescued, vetted, rehabilitated, and found forever homes for over 75 Siberian huskies. So that's really great. Now, Tiffany says that she and Kristen love the work they do and find it incredibly rewarding when they place a husky into a loving, nurturing home. They also find it very rewarding to continue to grow Shell's network of support. Tiffany says, without the help of all these people, we wouldn't be where we are now. It's our hopes to continue to grow and expand our network of support. Without further delay, I'd like to say hello to Kristen and Tiffany, who are calling in from Ohio, from the Siberian Husky Emergency Lifeline Fund. Hello and welcome, Kristen and Tiffany.
Hello. Hi.
How are you girls doing today?
Really good. Thanks so much for having us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I know we have a lot of information we want to get out there. You guys do some really awesome things for the dogs, so I'm really excited to have you guys on. Now, Kristen, you've worked with dogs in need for years before starting Shell. What was the deciding factor for you to actually go out and start your own rescue?
Well, like you had mentioned earlier, my male husky, Vinny, is only
or was only fond of huskies at the beginning. I was fostering with other rescue organizations. And when Vinny was an adolescent, I tried to introduce him to a couple of actual labradoodles, and he didn't like that very much. So then I started fostering just huskies for other organizations, and I realized that the need for rescuing huskies was very large in the Cleveland, Ohio area. So I quickly started doing research and got all the paperwork together and got my nonprofit status and started my own husky rescue.
Now, with Vinny not liking other dogs other than huskies, how does he feel about the rescue now with so many huskies all around him?
Well, we actually call Vinny Grandpa Vinny. Ever since he was probably 6 months old, he's always had this little, like, growl, grumble, where kind of like a little grumpy grandpa. And so he actually, he sniffs me up and down whenever he smells like I bring a new dog home or a new dog into rescue. But he's gotten really used to it. He's almost like immune to it. He just does his little grandpa grumble and then is on his own way sleeping. So.
Now, Kristen or Tiffany, do you have foster homes for your rescues, or do you have a site that they reside in?
This is Kristen. So we do have like a handful of foster homes, and those we reserve for our more specific behavioral issues in our dogs where we need a lot more hands-on care. But we do have, we own a boarding facility.
Okay.
And most of our dogs, almost, I would say probably 90% of them are housed at our boarding facility or integrated into our home until we can find them forever homes.
Now, you've, as we said before, adopted out 75 huskies in a little over 2 years, and that's really wonderful. How many huskies who need homes do you have right now?
Currently, we have 20 adoptable huskies. We do have about 10 other huskies that are considered special needs, or I would say more like sanctuary type huskies, but right now we have 20 that are fully adoptable.
And Tiffany, as adoption coordinator, what are you looking for in a foster or family for your huskies?
In terms of foster families, what we're looking for is someone that's definitely familiar with the breed. They've had a little bit of husky experience because they can be a trying breed. Especially if they are just coming into a home for the first time and we don't really know what their background is, they can be very testy. But in terms of families overall, foster families, one of the big things we're looking for is someone that can provide that nurturing, that stability. The stability is the biggest element that we need just to kind of help get the huskies on track.
And, you know, either Tiffany or Kristen, your mission states you rescue Siberian huskies from local high-kill shelters. Now, while you're based out of Ohio, you rescue huskies from these shelters across the country. Is that correct?
This is Tiffany, and yes, that is correct. We work a great deal with a rescue in Indiana, or I'm sorry, a shelter in Indiana, but we also work with Illinois, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and also we do work, you know, in Ohio as well.
Now, are you open to other states if they're interested in working with you, if they have a need?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had huskies from other states. Those are just the states where I guess there isn't as much prevalence for husky rescue, so we kind of try to pull our weight and do what we can.
And how does someone who knows of a husky in need, who needs rescuing, go about getting help from Shell?
Well, the first step we would say is contact us if you're into the social media. Contact us via the Facebook or email us, which I'm sure you'll have our email address listed. But those are the two most important steps. Tiffany and I both work full-time now in other jobs, so contacting us via the phone causes a delay. So
the best
email
way
or Facebook.
Okay, that's good. And we'll have all that information in a little bit. I'm going to announce it again for our listeners, and again, I'll reiterate that both on my Facebook page and on you know, be on the Dog Works site where we have our permalink, and also on my blog. Now, if someone is interested in adopting one of your Huskies, what is the process? Can either Tiffany or Kristen, can you walk us through those steps?
Yes, I will walk us through the steps. The first thing would be is shoot us an email, let us know which dog you're interested in, and also check out the dog on Petfinder to make sure that you do have all of the requirements. Some dogs can't be in homes with small kids, and we pretty much have the specifics on Petfinder. But the first step is that, and then as soon as you find a dog that you might be interested in, to save time, we always ask that you complete an adoption application. The adoption application can be found online at our website, www.shellfund.org. And that has the adoption application. Complete that. It immediately gets submitted and sent to my email address, which comes up on my phone, so I can review that. And then I forward that on to Tiffany. And then Tiffany corresponds and sets up, assuming everything looks good and the application looks good, we set up a meet and greet with the dog. While we're setting that up, I go ahead and contact references and do a vet check to make sure that everything checks out behind the scenes. Then we do a meet and greet with the dog that you're interested in, or if we don't think that you would be a good fit for the dog that maybe you're interested in, we will suggest other dogs. During the meet and greet, we ask that every member of the family come, including any dogs that are in the household. And then after the meet and greet, if that goes good, then the next step is to do a home visit, which then leads into a home trial. The home visit is basically kind of an inspection to make sure, you know, the fence is secure, the house is secure. If there's any changes that need to be done, then we will tell you what those are. The home visits can be completed by some of our other volunteers if they aren't near us or located near us, the homes. Then we leave the dog for a one-week home trial. For some dogs, that can turn into a one-month home trial just because of certain issues that need to be walked through. We want to make sure that every dog that we put into a home is going to be there for the rest of their life. So we take this step very, very personally. We want to make sure that everyone in the family feels that the dog should stay and there isn't anything that needs to be worked through. And after that, once the dog is safe and sound and in their forever home, then we go ahead and finalize the adoption. During finalization, we can either meet somewhere if we have already seen the home ourselves, or if Tiffany and I have had another volunteer help and do the home check, most of the time then we will drive to wherever the home is with the family that it wants to adopt the dog and complete a home check and just check up on the dog and the family before we finalize. And then that's kind of a complete adoption from step one to step 10.
Now, when you go on these home visits, I know, you know, we all know that the Siberian Husky, there are special needs, but can you maybe just mention a few of the things that you're looking for when you do a home visit, obviously from blending of the family to what type of, you know, situation is there for the Husky?
Okay, well, I guess it depends. If it's a first-time Husky owner, the home visit is very in-depth. Most of the time with first-time Husky owners, we require a six-foot privacy fence. Everything has to be secure. Any of the gates, we highly recommend and sometimes make sure that they have either a padlock on an outside gate just in case, like, the neighborhood kids don't come into the yard and leave the gate open. And then we also, for first-time Husky owners, I sometimes let them borrow before we actually start the home trial. I let them borrow a book called Siberian Huskies for Dummies just to kind of have them get a feel and background of the breed and make sure it is something that they want to go through with. So we take first-time Husky owners very seriously. Now, most of the time, once someone has already had a Husky, they've already been through the ups and downs and all the antics. So we kind of, it's a little bit less time consuming, but we still take that very very strongly that we will check out the home and, you know, make sure the doors, you know, for the front door, that doors aren't left open, or the infamous Siberian that jumps up on the screen door and opens it up for themselves, you know, things like that. So we kind of just go through the entire house and the yard, check for holes under the fence, things like that.
And, you know, I just want to elaborate on a few of these excellent points, because, you know, if we do have any first-time Husky listeners and that, they're probably wondering, you know, why such a, you know, strict, you know, check, why a six-foot fence, and, you know, as all of us Husky parents know, Huskies can easily scale fences. The privacy fence is, helps, because if they didn't have that, they could easily climb over a fence. Holes is just part of their nature. They can dig holes to another country. So I know here we reinforce the bottom of our fence with we dropped in railroad ties, and then we run stakes through that are in concrete, and then we actually have shale drop down in front of that. Sometimes people come here and go, isn't that extreme? No, it's not extreme. We have one of ours, Bandit, we call her the flying monkey, because she can actually get running off the deck, and we have a ramp because we have a few dogs who are rehabilitating, and she literally gets airborne, so she can catch squirrels and birds in midair. So, you know, a dog jumping a 4-foot fence, a husky, that's no problem for them. So, you know, just in case, because, you know, sometimes we hear things like, oh, rescues are so strict with their applications, and you have to be, you know, just because if they haven't had a husky, they really don't understand that these dogs actually think their way out of things. They, when you talk about latches on gates, Mike Gibson, there isn't a baby gate, a metal gate, or a doorknob that he can't open. And, you know, so, so
wow.
It's very true. So they're, you know, the reasons why folks like yourself do this, for anyone who's listening, is you know, to know the breed is truly to understand the breed. So when the rescues are coming and checking for these type of things, there are really, really serious reasons why they need to be in place in order to keep your husky safe. Now, in talking about this, I actually want to just backtrack. You had mentioned Petfinder.com. So if someone's on your site and they see a husky that they're interested in, they should locate this dog over on Petfinder to get the details. Can you just talk how they can do that?
I believe, actually, I'll refer the fund to Tiffany, but I believe there is a link on our website now.
Yeah, I think
actually
there is.
On our,
yeah. Isn't that how I found Bruce, I think?
I'm not sure, but I know that we just updated our website about 2 months ago, and under our the shellfund.org website, when you go under adoptables, it's actually set up so it, if you click on one of the dogs, it takes you to Petfinder and to their Petfinder link, I suppose.
And then there's all the information about the dog, so the folks can read all about that and then pursue from that point. Wonderful.
Absolutely.
Now, with all the home visits that you guys do, are you then, do you only adopt in-state, or do you also adopt out-of-state?
No, this is Tiffany. Actually, I would say that we, half of our adopters are actually out of state. We don't go too far. Like, we do the surrounding states normally. We do a lot of work in Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. Those, I would say, are the states that we kind of try to stick to.
Okay. Now, if a potential adoptive parent out of Ohio needs help with transportation, do you have a network or resources that you share with them, or, you know, steer them into a direction in case they can't do the transportation themselves?
This is Tiffany again. Actually, more recently, because half of our adoptions have been out of state, we've really started to build up this network of people that complete home checks for us, things like that. So normally, if we have an applicant out of state and we're unable to get and do a home check, what we've been doing initially is having one of our supporters go out, complete the home check, and get the paperwork back to us. And if this were to check out, what we do is we set up a time for the family to come out, and if the meet and greet goes well, we would allow the family to either take the dog from there to their home once the home's checked out and start the home trial.
Wonderful. Now, do a lot of your dogs who are adopted, do the folks stay in touch with you? Do you get to see how they're doing, you know, after everything's all been settled?
Yeah, we do actually. One of the things that I personally pride myself in is trying to really build a really strong relationship with all of our adopters or potential adopters. One of the things that I require is when a dog is on a home trial is whether you text me, email me, you Facebook us, and just over the first, you know, 3 to 4 days, just give us regular updates. And through that, I guess the families kind of feel like we really or they understand that we really are invested in the husky, even after they're adopted. If there's any problems, we always want to be available for them. So, yeah.
Oh, that's really great. It's kind of like seeing your kids grow up and move out a little bit, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, if someone can't foster or adopt, are there other ways that they can help you guys there? Can they volunteer to visit or walk the huskies? Can they assist foster families in any way? What types of ways? You know, I know you have some events, and we'll talk about one of your big ones coming up. But what other ways can they help if they can't actually, take a husky in?
There are a couple of different ways they can. Since our shelter or boarding facility is actually also our home, we don't allow people to just show up unannounced just because we don't want to, it is our family and our home too. So what we do is if someone is interested in visiting, playing, or walking the huskies, then we have them contact us. Easiest way, I've said before, is via email. And most of the time we set up a day and a time on the weekend for them to come out, read over some volunteer paperwork that we have just kind of explaining more information about the breed, especially if they aren't familiar with huskies. Then I walk them through the first time that they come to volunteer. I walk them through the whole facility so they can meet all the sanctuary dogs and all the adoptable huskies. There are a few, probably about two on property that we don't let any volunteers handle, and that's just due to behavioral issues or reasons and safety. So we'll tell them which dogs are off limits. We introduce them to all the dogs. I stand out in the yard while they're being introduced to all the dogs to make sure everyone gets along okay. And then after that, we allow the volunteers to do more one-on-one with the dogs where I'm not having to be there. I'm normally off doing something else. And then we do have a couple of volunteers that come weekly, pick a day, and they were close to the Metro Parks, and so they will take a dog, I'll help harness the dog up. They'll put them in their car, take them down to the Metro Parks, go for a little, maybe 30-minute hike, bring them back, and then pick up another dog. So that kind of gets the dogs off property and allows them to do interactions with humans and walking, and it gives us a lot of information about how they would be in a potential home. Additionally, we do allow families to foster. Like I said, we only have a network of a few foster families, and that's more because the rescue isn't too large, so we want to make sure that we are familiar with the foster families. If we have too large of a foster network, we get pulled in too many different directions. But if someone is interested in fostering, we normally require that they have had husky experience in the past before we allow a family to foster, and then we just have them contact us, meet the dogs, and go from there and see which dog would be a good fit. And also for any of our events, anyone that wants to volunteer, we welcome. For larger events, we do have volunteer meetings, maybe one or two before the event, just so everyone can be on the same page, and also, fill out some paperwork for volunteering due to insurance reasons, and kind of go from there.
Now, I just wonder, you mentioned sanctuary huskies and some special needs huskies. Can you just talk briefly and explain to maybe some listeners, what are sanctuary huskies?
Well, sanctuary huskies are dogs that have come into our care, and we have tried to rehabilitate and adopt out, and either they keep coming back. Normally, after we've tried to adopt them out, and they've come back about four times.
you know, it gets to a point where we say enough is enough. We do have one dog in particular right now, Yeti. Yeti came from a hoarding situation out in Trumbull County. He came to us about probably going on 5 years now. And he came, the hoarding situation he came from, there were about over 200 dogs on the property. So he had never really had one-on-one interactions with humans. He was very skittish. It took me about 6 months just to allow me to touch him. And then we did try to integrate him inside the house, and he freaked out and had never been in a home, and he was already middle-aged. So we moved into an outside kennel. Then we tried to get him into a foster home, and he actually ripped off some of the privacy fence boards and escaped, and we tried to find his way back to us. So it got to a point where we were like, it's unsafe for him to be out in the general public, and so he will just live out his life with us. And then, yeah, and then we do have two other huskies that we got to. We call them the twins, or the mini huskies. But they, Mikey and Sequoia, we got them over a year ago. They were in locked in the basement of some ex-sled dog racer's house. And they grew up in the basement and never were allowed out, and they were found in horrible conditions. They are both woolly-coated huskies, which is longer hair, and they're probably about 20 pounds when they came to us, and that it was a skinny version of their full size. They're kind of miniature. But anyway, they are almost like feral dogs. They had never had any interaction and were completely wild. They had to go, when we first got them, they were so disgusting that we had to take them directly to the vet. They were put under anesthesia, completely shaved down, bald, because they had so many tight mats and skin lesions. And then at that point, they were also spayed and neutered. But I have been trying to rehabilitate them for over a year now, and I still have to corner them in order to catch them, which makes them unsafe to go into any homes. So unless they kind of turn around in the next couple of years, it's safe to say that they'll probably remain here, because once I finally have them able to bond to me, it's going to be very difficult to switch that on to someone else. We even have them, they were so skittish of humans that we even started them on a low-dose like anti-anxiety medicine, which has helped tremendously, but it just kind of takes the edge off, but it's still, they're nowhere near being able to be adopted. Volunteers can't even work with them, so.
Wow, that's amazing work, and just knowing that they have their forever home with you, you know, it's really great to hear. I mean, you guys do great work.
Now, thank you.
For listeners who are just tuning in, you're listening to the SciVibe on Dog Works Radio, and we are chatting with Kristen and Tiffany Manrode of the Siberian Husky Emergency Lifeline, also known as SHEL. They rescue Siberians from local high-kill shelters across the country, rehabilitate them, and prepare them for adoption to forever homes. You can find out more information on their website, www.shellfund.org, and on the Siberian Husky Emergency Lifeline Facebook page. Kristen or Tiffany, excuse me, I'm battling a cold here. On your website, you talk about the Siberian Husky breed. So can we talk a little bit about what advice do you have for people who are thinking about adopting a Siberian Husky, you know, who have never had one before?
Well, there's two different things I can explain. First, if you are if you're thinking about getting a dog and maybe you just, you know, retired, you're a little bit older, then we highly recommend not getting a husky puppy. We recommend maybe getting a middle-aged or older husky, just because anyone that has had a husky before can tell you huskies are very energetic, very aloof, and if you don't exercise them enough, they will find their own way to exercise, which is normally destructive.
Yeah.
So, but we find that Siberian Husky breeds do best in homes where the family is very active, maybe more outdoorsy, likes to take adventures. They're great hiking partners. But they also can be devious, and they're very, very intelligent. A lot of people will compare them. You know, they have the intelligence of a German Shepherd. They just do things because they want to do it versus doing things for their master. So
very, very nicely put.
Yeah. So because they're very intelligent dogs. They're probably one of the most intelligent dogs. But that's why they find themselves in rescue, because they can escape out of most situations, and people just get tired of looking for them. They're beautiful puppies. They're as cute as can be as little puppies. But as they hit their adolescence, many people, the faint at heart, have a hard time dealing with them. So that's how a lot of times we'll get the dogs that are about a year and a half. That's when they normally end up in rescue, because people just can't, they're out of their cute puppy phase, and people just can't handle them because of their high energy level.
They, and when you talk about them, you know, being intelligent, and I always say this, they are very intelligent, that you can look at them, and while you're talking to them, you can see the wheels turning. They're already thinking ahead of you, like, how am I going to get around this, or do I want to do this right now? And it is a whole different, and I've had other rescue dogs before, mixed breeds, German Shepherds, poodles in our family, and this is the first breed that really tries to outthink me, and we have one who at times is quite successful.
How about the talking back?
Oh yes. We have two that are very big talker backers. our Chloe and our Wolf. And Chloe will actually get very frustrated if she's trying, if you tell her something, especially if it's food time, anything that has to do with food. And usually when I walk in a room, somehow I represent food to her. I must be the treat mom, you know. But she will start talking, and it's like, okay, I know. And then it's almost like she's telling you, hurry up, I'm hungry, you're late, what's taking you so long? And she does it all, of course, in husky speak. And if you don't get it and respond to her right away, she gets louder and more demanding. It's just, yes, I husky back talk, it's great. I mean, I love it. But not everybody will. Now, I think there was going to be a second point you were going to talk about when we were talking about, what advice you have for people thinking about a husky. One was about the puppy versus the older dog, and I think we might have sidetracked. What other piece of advice about getting a first-time husky would you recommend?
Because I was talking about you either would get an older husky, which are great, and we always recommend for first time husky owners, maybe get a middle aged 5-6-year-old husky, because they're a little bit they still have as much energy as most dogs, but they kind of are a little bit more manageable. And then once you can manage that age and that type of dog, then you can introduce the young adolescents. So we always say they come in twos. Once you get one husky, you want to get another husky, because they keep each other entertained and kind of help keep each other out of trouble. So.
That's true. When we first got Harley, she's our first one. She's our black and white, our alpha queen, and she wears that very proudly, I might add. We had an elder Akita Shepherd mix, and she, of course, a rambunctious Siberian Husky pup, I mean, Chelsea had absolutely no chance. So Gibson joined the pack. Before Gibson did, she would then turn on us and be like, oh, okay. You'd call her from across the yard, and she'd come running at you, turn sideways, and slam into you like a football player. And she winded us quite a few times. And then my husband finally said, you know, I think she needs another husky to play with. And when we brought Gibson in, he was 4 months old, and he's a woolly. He's a big woolly now. But at the time, he was still smaller than her. And she hit him so hard the first time in husky play that he rolled and landed into the side of our pool sitting like a baby. And he just looked like, what just happened to me? But he found that must have been the moment he fell in love with her, because they're inseparable. But it definitely, getting back to your point, having two definitely was wonderful for her. I mean, it was great for both of them. She now had someone to keep up and play. And my guys are are basically really great. They have an area here, knock on wood, you know, I don't want to say it, but they really do stay out of mischief because the environment here is very conducive for them. We did get caught on two, and then, of course, we got the three pups at one time. So with five of them, they do entertain each other. You know, we have a deck where they sit up high so they can look over the yard. They have free access to one side of the yard that we call it their side because they can dig if they want to dig. They can lay in holes if they want to lay. So it's very conducive to their what their habitat would be like that they would be happy in. And, of course, we do have a six-foot privacy fence. And as I said before, it's Fort Husky here. But having more than one is definitely a great piece of advice. Five's not for everybody, but two is really a great number.
Yes.
Now, we've talked about caring for huskies in the warmer weather. We talk about that a lot with other folks, you know, because some of our rescues that we know are located in more tropical and hot climates. And now I'd actually like to talk about the opposite, freezing cold weather climates. Now, on your Facebook page, you've shared some posters, as we did too, about reminding people to please not leave their pets out in the cold, you know, when the temps dip down into, and we're talking freezing below zero wind chill days. There's a lot of folks who may say, hey, you know, they're Siberian Huskies. They should be able to stay out and take the cold weather. What do you say to that, and what key points, precautions, or prevention should people know about dogs, even Huskies, who are outdoors when temps drop?
Well, what I have to say about that is it depends on what the Husky is used to. When we get a dog in the rescue that has lived outside their entire life, when you try to integrate them inside. For instance, we put everyone inside when the temperatures, I think it was like negative 19 here or something like that. We brought everyone inside to the inside boarding kennel, and there was an uproar with some of the dogs, but it was for their safety. But anyway, if they're used to being outside in the winter, they develop a very thick coat. So they can handle the cold. They do need igloos are the best for huskies. They feel the most secure, but they do need thick shelter, insulated shelter, and straw is a great insulator if they have to be outside. Now, the other hand is if you just have your traditional house husky, so your dog that stays in the house, they aren't going to have that thick coat from living outside and being in the extreme temperature. So if you leave your husky that is used to being in the house outside for an extended period of time, they aren't going to be able to handle it just like any other domesticated dog wouldn't be able to handle it. And so that is very scary when an inside dog is left outside too long. They can't handle the extreme temperatures because their coat is regulated for the heat in the house. So.
Right. Now, Robert, you've had husky sled dogs for years. Can you jump in and share some important precautions for people to know about caring for huskies in the cold Alaska temperatures? I know your Bodie and Reagan are couch potatoes, but what about the rest of your team, and how do they fare in the cold temps, and what do you do to prepare for the harsh Alaskan weather?
Well, you know, everything that our guest said this morning is exactly correct. We follow those same procedures. We have 36 sled dogs, and all but two of them stay outside, and all of those guys prefer to stay outside. When we bring them in, they're ready to jump right out the door as fast as they came in. They're panting and hot and, you know, pretty much doggy sweating, as they say. But we do incorporate a house for each one of our dogs. We do keep our puppies in a indoor kennel in our kennel building or our garage, so they have the ability to go in and out. But most of these guys, they stay outside all the time, and even in minus 30 degree temperatures, you'll find them laying outside on top of their houses in the middle of the night. It's a very interesting way to see a dog. You know, most people think that, you know, their dogs want to stay inside and be warm and cozy in a dog bed, but these sled dogs, they were born for this, they were bred for this, and that's what they enjoy to do.
Yeah, I know here even, and we have both in our pack. Like Chloe, we said she'd be a perfect tropical dog. She don't want nothing to do with being outside. She's the one who will find a little slither of sun on the deck. She's very happy being in. Gibson, on the other hand, he's not very happy this winter because he did wind up having an accident Christmas Eve. He slipped on ice, so he's in rehabilitation for a torn CCL and weak hind end. He's our epileptic, so he's had some weak hind end issues. But he loves being outdoors. He's the one that you'll find on top of the house, or he loves to lay under the big maple in the snow and just put his nose in the snow. And even right now with rehabilitating him, when I take him out, he has to be walking a harness and a sling set, and he's in a brace. As soon as he's done, he starts pulling me over toward his tree because he wants to go over in his spot. So it's, you know, for him, he's not happy in the house, but, you know, he is right now. So it is interesting to, you know, because I think a lot of folks, you know, huskies are different. You can't compare huskies to, say, poodles because of the coat. And I think it's important for them to have heard this, that, you know, there are different variations, and it does depend on, you know, what the dog is used to. So I thank you all three, really, for explaining that to our readers, our listeners. And speaking of which, our listeners who are just tuning in, again, you're listening to The Side Vibe on Dog Works Radio, and we're chatting with Kristen and Tiffany Manrote of the Siberian Husky Emergency Lifeline, also known as SHEL, and they rescue Siberians from local high-kill pounds across the country, rehabilitate them, and prepare them for adoption into forever homes. And you can find out more information on their website at www.shell.org or shellfund.org, and on the Siberian Husky Emergency Lifeline Facebook page. I'm going to digress just for a few minutes, off topic, but not really. As many of my listeners and readers are aware of, I'm getting ready to release my second Five Sides tale, finally, Getting Healthy with Harley. We were hoping to get it out last year, but we are getting ready now for publication. And I'm also working with my illustrator on a third book called Cooking with Chloe, which I hope to publish later this year, along with some pretty special things I think fans will really enjoy. As with each of my books, I donate a percentage of proceeds to a husky or canine epilepsy-related nonprofit organization. Post-production costs, as I produce and pay for the books myself through my very small indie Arctic House publishing company. With my Cooking with Chloe book, I'm hoping to raise some funds to donate to SHEL. So I'm pretty excited about that. And I just wanted to ask both Tiffany and Kristen, how do these donations, no matter how small, actually help your rescue?
I would say, this is Tiffany, I would say that any donation, whether it's monetary or food items, treats, it helps tremendously. Any donations that we receive monetarily normally go into food. I would say every week on average we spend about $200 on food just to feed the huskies, so that doesn't even include treats or medical care, which we also pay for. If we don't have donations, we're paying out of pocket. So any donations are very, very useful and very appreciated.
Great. And then I also think, too, visibility helps, because even though, you know, I'm a small, very small one person, and, you know, I like to try to help wherever I can. But I also think sometimes, too, on the books we have the logo and the name of the rescue, so visibility might help, too, because you never know who gets the book and shares it with someone else who maybe really could be even in a better position to help donate. I mean, I'm sure that would also help.
Yeah, definitely.
What I'd like to do for our listeners and any of our readers who are tuning in, for our live listeners, a chance to win a copy of Cooking with Chloe when it comes out. Now, I have to say it's not going to be out for a while yet, but one lucky listener will be able to receive one of the first copies of the book when it's released. Just visit our Five Sides Siberian Husky Canine News and Reviews Facebook page. Leave a comment under the post announcing today's show with our guests Tiffany and Kristen from SHEL, saying who Bruce is. Now, we haven't talked about him yet, but we're going to in a minute. The first person to correctly comment on who Bruce is and how I know him will win an autographed copy of Cooking with Chloe when it is released later this year. And Chris and Tiffany, just talking about funds and donations and helping out, on your website, you also have calendars and T-shirts available for sale to help fund the Huskies. I know you talked about, like, food and donations, whether it's monetary, food, treats. Are there specific items that you would want folks to donate, and if they did, how can they get them to you?
Yeah, there. I mean, specific items. One of the things that we always appreciate is grain-free food. We feed all of our huskies grain-free, so any donations like that. We also get do appreciate donations of treats, toys. Right now, we are going through a tremendous amount of straw because we do try to keep it clean and fresh for all the huskies. In terms of getting it to us, this is our home, we don't have people just stop by. So what we do is if someone wants to bring donations out, the best way to get in touch with us either is through Facebook or through email, and we could set up a date and time where they could come out and bring donations.
Great. This past Christmas, you held a sponsor a husky, and I was lucky enough to sponsor a handsome boy named Bruce, and I made him an honorary member of the Five Fives family this Christmas, and I really had a lot of fun putting together, his package, and it just really felt wonderful to be able to help bring some holiday cheer to, one of the huskies in need, and I just think it's a terrific program. Can you share with our listeners, how this program came about, and talk about how sponsoring one of the huskies helped?
The program came about with we realized most of our huskies that are in rescue do not get treats and toys and individual items that most other dogs that live in a home have, since most of our resources are all put into feeding them a high-quality food. So Tiffany came up with the idea of having a sponsor a husky program where each dog could get spoiled for the holidays. We're hoping to continue that on throughout the year.
Oh, great. That was actually going to be my next question, if it's just limited to Christmas, or will you be doing it, year-round? Now, you'll send information to me, and I can share that with our listeners and our readers if, when you're going to do that, and because I know that there's a lot of people who would love to sponsor one.
Okay, yes. We will send that information on to you and take care of trying to link people up with an individual dog to sponsor, especially our sanctuary dogs. They're the ones in the most need because they aren't really going anywhere, mm-hmm. and they do deserve to be spoiled.
And I loved my thank you from Bruce. I have to tell everyone who's tuned in, it was this beautiful card with, a picture of him, and just he's such a beautiful boy. It was just really nice, so thank you. But, it was really a lot of fun, and it was kind of neat having six sides for a while.
Aw, awesome.
Even if it was virtual. Now, Bruce is going to be celebrating his second birthday in February, and he's available for adoption through Shell. There's a great video of him playing on the Shell, the Siberian Husky Emergency Lifeline Facebook page, and he does require a special loving home as he has some specific needs. Is that right?
Yes, he does.
Okay, so he
has... Do you want me to go into that?
Yeah, would you just for a few minutes just talk about that?
Do you want me to talk about maybe his his health condition and kind of what we are our restrictions that we do have for him?
That would be great.
Okay. Well, let's getting back to the history of Bruce. He was surrendered to our rescue by a young girl. I think she was just about 18. He was originally purchased from a pet store, and around at 12 weeks of age, she found out that he was having difficulty breathing. He was starting to turn blue, so she rushed him to the emergency vet, and he was diagnosed with a condition called laryngeal paralysis. Most commonly, the condition occurs in older labs, but genetically, every once in a while, a dog can have this condition and be born with it. So basically his larynx, which is almost like his vocal box, normally it shuts when you swallow and it opens when you breathe. His just stayed shut, so he wasn't getting any air into his lungs or a very small amount, which was causing him, him to turn blue due to lack of oxygen. So the girl went ahead and contacted everyone. She got prices for surgeries, and it was about $3,000 or so. There was a local vet clinic that said, hey, we can do a surgery. It's a new technique. It's done with lasers, and we can do it for like $800. So, of course, she wanted to save her puppy's life because everyone else told her, hey, just have the dog put down. So she went ahead and had this procedure done. What the procedure was, it basically they used a laser, and it
removed the little flap of skin that covers the airway. It's basically the same way that they would debark a dog. Basically kind of debarked him. So that surgery, it bought him time, but it wasn't a true fix, like she was convinced that it was. So fast forward about 6 months, all the scar tissue from that surgery grew back, and now his airway was closing again. We didn't know any of this. We thought the condition had been fixed when she decided, hey, I'm going back to school. I can't afford to care for him anymore, and she surrendered the husky to us. So it wasn't until we took him to our vet to be neutered that our vet told us, hey, his airway, the hole is so small, I can hardly put a tube down it. I have to use a cat intubation tube, and he needs to go to a specialist. So he was neutered. Then we took him on to a specialist in Akron, Ohio, and the specialist said, hey, basically what we need to do is remove all the scar tissue, so fix the old surgery that wasn't really a fix, and then actually do a tie-back procedure, which will tie back the cartilage and open up his airway. So we went ahead, had that surgery done, of course, because it's Bruce. He had some complications, and he needed, at one point, he needed to have a temporary tracheostomy. I am luckily a registered nurse, so I was able to care for that. Then it was quickly reversed. Everything healed. He had a total of about 3 different surgeries, and we spent about upwards of $8,000, I believe, on him. And now it's been almost a year now, not quite a year, but his only precautions now are that that he needs to eat out of a raised food dish. He is on 2 medications, which cost about $10 a month. We do soak his food, his hard kibble, for about 30 minutes so that it can get soft and so that it's easier for him to swallow. And then he can't wear a collar on his neck. He can only have a collar on for identification. He needs to be walked via harness. And the other thing is, because if you have a husky, you know, most huskies like to bite on each other's neck, and that's kind of how they play. So we are right now recommending no other huskies in the home, unless it's an older husky that doesn't play rough like that. We're also trying to keep him within the state of Ohio, just because the surgeon that did all of his surgery is based out of Akron, and although he doesn't require any follow-up care, just down the road, if he needed something, we want him to be nearby where he could go to the surgeon that did the surgery. So,
hey, he's been through a lot. He's very lucky to have you guys taking care of him, and he is a beautiful dog, and folks can, I did post him back around the holidays on my blog. You can take a look on there, and again, as I said, tomorrow I'll be posting some information so folks can take a look, but they can go right on over to the Shell Facebook page or website and take a look at him. I know we have about 5 minutes left in the show, and I did have another question or two. For our live listeners, the show, we will be posting a permalink, so you can tune in to hear anything that might be cut off on when we go off of live. So quickly, I want to put in there, Kristen or Tiffany, I know this year you're holding your first annual Howlin' Hike, and I want to make sure I get the date and a little information in there. Can you tell us the date and a little bit about it?
The Howlin' Hike will be the first ever. It'll be April 26th, 2014. I believe it's the weekend after Easter. And it will be held here locally, actually in Berea, Ohio, in the Metro Parks. Some more specifics on the event, because we're kind of just trying to gather all the information, will be on our website. That's the best option to follow us and to find out about the event.
Wonderful. And just in closing, if you had a dream wish list for Shell, what would be on it?
This is actually kind of funny. The dream wish list would include anything to do to rehab our facilities and our kennels. So for the building that we house most of our sides is about 25, 30 years old. It was a boarding kennel for many, many years, and then we've just turned it directly over to the rescue. So a lot of the kennel buildings, the flooring, all that stuff is run down and has been used and abused by many dogs. So our dream list consists of kind of changing that around and making it more secure for the huskies that we do have in rescue, and also help make each of our sanctuary dogs, the dogs that are going to live out their lives here, we would love to have individual kennels where kind of they can have their kingdom, I should say, where they have, you know, their own house and they don't have to share amongst the other rescue dogs. They kind of have their own area where right now everyone kind of has to share. So that's our dream.
I think that's a pretty good dream, and I hope that this is a dream wish that comes true. That would be really amazing. And before we close out, Robert, was there anything else that you want to ask either Tiffany or Kristen or want to add before we sign off?
No, great interview. Thank you, guys.
All right. Well, then,
thank you.
We'd really like to thank both of you, Kristen and Tiffany, from the Siberian Husky Emergency Lifeline for joining us today. Please be sure to visit their Facebook page and website at www.shellfund.org and tell them the Five Sides Mom and Team Ineke says hello. Right, Robert?
There you go.
All right. Take care, and we'll talk to everybody in February.
Thank you.
See you guys next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.